Hello everyone, Stuart Campbell here, and this week we are bringing you a special interview with Bruce Brackenhoff, which I recorded at the recent St. Bart's Bucket in March on board a sailing yacht he has sold a number of times, and that is Rose Hearty. Bruce is a bucket veteran and has taken part in the event dozens of times between Newport, Nantucket and St. Bart's. As well as a chat about the bucket, its past and its future, we talk about his move over to the brokerage side of Edmiston after a storied career with Perini Navi, and we talk about some of the amazing boats and owners he worked with at that shipyard. Bruce is truly one of this industry's best-known characters, and it was great to be able to dig into his vast super yachting experience and knowledge. So with that, let's rewind a few months back to the bucket and the aft deck of Rose Hearty. So Bruce, we're sitting here in the cockpit of one of the finest Perinis ever built, no? Rose Hearty.
Sure.
Which you've sold a number of times.
I've been involved in the transaction several times, yes.
How many buckets is this for you?
Between Nantucket, Newport, and St. Bart's, I'm going to say 40.
40?
Between Nantucket, Newport, and St. Bart's, yeah. Somewhere in the 40 range.
Were you there when Nelson Doubleday started the first ever?
I wasn't there when they started the first one, but my first one in Nantucket was, I think, 1992.
Wow.
And I think they started in 87 or 88. So I was there. We used to raft up. They wouldn't go to the docks. And there were seven or eight boats, but that was as far back as I go.
And in that time, how have you kind of seen the bucket evolve? Obviously, it kind of left Nantucket and then found a new home in St. Bart's.
It left Nantucket in not until 2000, but it started in St. Bart's in, I think it was 1995. And it was essentially the same group, the core group, which was led by Tom Taylor. Roger James was the captain. There was a boat called Volador, which I think Charles Butt owned. Then Mr. Cabani came in with Sari, which Tim Lockridge was his captain. So you had those three or four owners who in the winter decided to come up with an event like the Nantucket Bucket. And so they ended up in St. Bart's. And the first one, as I said, was 95. And my first one was 97 on a boat called Legacy.
Were you here the infamous Le Mans start year?
No, I was not here that year. I think that was 97. So my first one was 98.
Okay. And, you know, so back then it was a much smaller event, obviously, but then it hit some glory years of like 40 boats. And then
we had 40, I always remember it as 43, but I've heard people say it was 47, and that was 1 year. And I'm going to guess it was 2011 or maybe 12. It was kind of crazy. It was before the SYRA. I think the SYRA started just after that year. And so they began to come up with some very, very enforceable rules, particularly the 40 meter. They also changed to, instead of having one giant pursuit race where the slowest boat started first and the fastest boat started last, right through the fleet, and everybody finished in theory at exactly the same time, and it was pretty close to that, they broke us into classes. And so they'd have a class start in around a 10-minute period. And then, and so they kind of separated everybody.
I can't imagine that scene as 40-plus.
On the third day, it was amazing because they were all coming around the bend right about where we are,
yeah,
with their spinnakers downwind. It was pretty remarkable. And surely it was amazing view from the shore.
I bet it was. So let's talk about you. So you're now with Edmiston.
Yep.
But you previously had a very long career at Perini Navi, and we're sitting on a Perini now. So when did you start with Perini?
I visited Perini in, I think it was 1992. I worked for my father and his partner, Joe Bartram. They sent me over to do the San Remo boat show. And there was a broker familiarization trip on charter boats in Greece. So I did that trip too. And in between the two, I stopped at Perini because my dad's partner was very close to Jeff Moore, who was the project manager on Morning Glory. And they had me visit Morning Glory and do, during that time, I walked through the Perini yard, got a tour, and met Fabrizio and Giancarlo and Barack, actually, the three guys. And then the next year, I had a customer actually ask me if I knew anything about Perini, and I had been there the year before. Ultimately, that fellow bought Legacy. We built the last year and a half of the build, and I became kind of immersed with those guys. And then Mr. Perini decided that he wanted a representative of America, and they picked me. So I think that was 95.
And I love the stories of the old Perini days, because it seems like you're such a good unit, you, Barack.
There were, if you ask me, Perini was a group of people that it wasn't just a big blue boat with two masts and a flybridge. It was that. It was a builder, it was a designer, and it was a group of people. For I was there 25 or 26 years, and I was one of the shorter tenures. Franco Romani was, I think, employee number two. Fabrizio was employee number three. And they were there for almost 40 years, or almost their whole careers.
Wow.
And we were definitely a good team.
And what did, in your view, looking back, kind of what is that Perini of that time? What was its legacy? I mean, it kind of changed big boat sailing, didn't it?
Family. You had crew that worked on five or six or seven boats. You had owners that had two, some of them who had three. You had owners that had kids where I watched them grow from 3 years old to their college graduations, and we all knew each other. They knew us, and they knew the other owners. And we focused on their whole experience, the shopping, the building, the owning, the using, and the selling.
And was that, it obviously was a great outcome of having that community, but what it was deliberately set. So it was the plan to kind of build this family of Perini owners and keep entertaining, you know, see them at events and maintain those relationships throughout the year and throughout many years, I suppose.
I'm not sure if it was the plan, but it sort of, we were really good at it. Each of us played different roles off of each other. For sure, Richo and I were probably the yes men, and Barack and Giancarlo were the poor guys who had to say no. I used to describe it that we would start the fires and they would tend them. And then we had Mrs. Perini, and we had Christina and Susanna and even Cinzia at the front desk. And we were there for many, many years, many, many boats and many, many owners.
Yeah. And you've maintained lots of those relationships, obviously, in your new career working with Emerson.
That's what it is. I think many yacht brokers or people who do what I do will tell you that it's way more about the relationship than it is the boat. I think that they decide what they're going to buy, but more importantly, who they're going to buy it with.
And your approach to brokerage is quite interesting. I mean, you told me once that, you know, if there's a pre-existing relationship, you wouldn't go around that. You know, there is a right way and the wrong way to do it, basically.
Generally, a tie should go to the other broker. That's where I came from a long time ago, was how my father and his partner taught me. It doesn't mean that everybody sticks exactly to that, but I try to find my relationships and keep them and not take a relationship from someone else.
Yeah. And that seems to be where it's working out for you, isn't it? I mean,
I've done okay. Yeah. I'm in a good spot.
How do we get more boats down to the bucket? I mean, how do we get more people sailing at these events and more people buying sailing boats generally?
It's a difficult question to answer. You know, I think that one of the, my observation, having been coming from the Perini world, which we are, our boats are, I define performance a little differently than maybe a naval architect defines it, or a true blue-blooded, blue-water sailor. My version of performance is not how the boat goes from A to B or how it goes to weather. My version of performance is how does it perform for the owner and their family over the 5 or 6 years that they owned it and cruised it, where they've been, and have they been able to get into shallow anchorages or deep bank as they've sailed fast? Have they done a bucket? Have they had parties? Have they been able to carry big payload? Has it worked for them? So if it's performed well in all of those, then it's a good performing boat. So I think that a lot of our owners that are in that category were intimidated a little bit by some of the competitiveness down here. And until we developed a group of like-minded owners where there were a bunch of similar styled boats, and each of those owners had a couple of minutes where they felt like they were going to win, until that happened, it was hard to crack and get more to come. But But when we got a bunch, suddenly there was 35 and 40 boats every year. It seems since the hurricane in 2017 here, we never got back above 34 or 35. And it sort of has been in the mid-20s. That's probably a little COVID-related. I think maybe the cost of carbon mass and carbon rigging and the cost of speed has maybe impacted some guys. But then you see the guys who create the boats with the Huismans and Louis Hemming and with Henry up at Baltic. So there are still some people who the money doesn't impact it. The cost of building a high-speed boat doesn't impact these fellows going ahead and doing that. But then again, you don't see them all here. So
yeah.
Long story short, I can't answer that question as I rambled.
That's actually quite a good answer.
Okay, so we've moved inside to get the winch out of the background. It's lovely air-conditioned saloon on Rose Harty. But just to pick up on that point about more boats in the bucket, I mean, obviously, everyone involved wants this to be a bigger fleet.
Personally, I think you got to be careful as to how big it gets, because I think St. Bart's is getting to the point where another five or six boats with 20 or 30 guests, crew, owners, starts to get this place right on the edge of what it can handle. As far as, I'm pretty sure I heard someone say that every hotel room and every villa is booked this week. Now, it happens to be spring break week also.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Captanieri, the dock, the little village, Bar Oubli, they seem to be pretty much packed now.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe the number, the magic number isn't, if you define success as 25 or 27 or 32, isn't a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I see, you know, the more the merrier is a great way to look at stuff.
And the Corinthian class is a great development.
It's a great development unless they send them on courses that don't have them going dead downwind. It's not a fun experience to be on a boat that doesn't have a spinnaker, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, you see some of these boats, they take it super, super seriously. Lots of race crew, you know, huge expense. Do you think the original spirit of the bucket was Corinthian? No? I mean,
100%. But it was also the boats like to win.
Yeah.
I mean, many of these guys like to win at everything. So that's why they have enough money to own these big boats. I think that it has developed into where you have, you know, it's like a pizza pie. You have a couple of slices that are high tech and high balls to the wall, and you have a group that couldn't give a hoot and are just here for the fun, and you have some people in the middle. We're aboard a Perini now. We weigh 1.5 pounds, and we got at least 20 really good sailors. Some of them are professionals. Many of them were professionals at one point in their lives. They're really good sailors, and we're on a big, big old Perini. Mm. So there's an example. Here's an example that sort of is a contradiction. You'd think we would be just out for a sail, but we're not.
Yeah. Well, we're suffering slightly with the light winds today, aren't we?
The lack of breeze is torture, but you know what? It's still back to, you know, when we bought the bucket, we won Perini and Huismann and Alloy and Vitters and Holland Jakbo. There were five of us. We bought the bucket when we had a press conference or a press announcement. I remember I got to speak, and I remember explaining that it was a celebration of the owners and the crew of the big sailboats by the industry with a regatta in the middle. And the racing part was secondary. The fact that we're all here and not picking the owners' pockets and trying to network with them and just get closer and have more and have fun with them rather than sell them stuff and win. And it's a little exaggeration, but that's kind of one of the pillars.
Yeah. And do you think that kind of the spirit, you mean you're one of the guardians of it really, aren't you? You, Carlos and Louis and
yeah, but I've been very lucky. They have allowed me to be enthusiastic the way I am enthusiastic.
Yeah.
So
you are enthusiastic.
It's a great tool to get closer to your owners, the people that you do business with, because you're helping them have fun with their boat.
Which is a Yeah, it's a secret, isn't it, really?
It's an art.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Did you find it easy transitioning from selling big yachts for a shipyard to selling big yachts for a brokerage company?
Because I know, because I have the same contacts, the same friends, and you just do the same thing, is just be honest and try to do the next right thing and try to help the owners enjoy their yacht, whether it's shopping, buying, owning, using, or selling, like I said before.
Yeah. And the owner of this boat, Joey, is involved in a very interesting project over in Italy at the moment. So we're going to see spectacular rebirth, I suppose, of Andromeda Lidea.
For sure. He bought this boat back in 2013 from the original owner and had 7 or 8 fantastic years, a bunch of buckets, Perini cups, an adventure, the Northwest Passage, and then down to Antarctica. And one end of one summer, we got an unsolicited offer, terrific offer, very fair. It had been his experience that you sell when you can, not when you want to. And so surprisingly, he accepted that offer. So we sold the boat. About 2 months later, he essentially, I would call it, got landsick, which is the opposite of seasick. He missed the boat. He missed the crew. He missed the program. He missed me. He missed the contact with all this stuff and the people and the kind of stirring the pot. So there was an opportunity to buy a very, very famous boat, a Perini called Andromeda. It's quite a bit older. And his connection to Andromeda actually started in the very early 90s when he was a successful guy, but much younger, and had a home in Maine, and woke up one morning and in Anchorage, out his nearest his house was Andromeda anchored. It was with Tom Perkins. And he tells me that he said, you know, one day I'm going to own one of those. So I'm not sure if that's exactly true, but that's the story I tell. So years later, here we are. He's sold Rose Hardy, maybe mistakenly, and misses his crew and his team. And so he bought Andromeda back, and it had been kind of neglected. So he decided to try to restore it, maybe do a little bit of a refit. And a couple of years later, brand new interior, brand new every single possible system and piece of equipment. We're going to bring it out of the sheds at the end of May, and it'll get commissioned in June and July, and should be in the Monaco Yacht Show for sale.
And in the meantime, he bought...
In the meantime, sorry, he ended up, the fellow who bought Rose Hardy from him, about a year into it, decided that maybe it wasn't the right boat for him. And I called Joey, and he bought it back.
Yeah.
So here we are.
Here we are. Your early career... working for your dad. So how did you, was it just taken for granted that you would join the yachting business?
No, not at all. Growing up, I didn't enjoy sailing, didn't really enjoy boats, certainly not as much as my dad and mom did. I was from Larchmont, New York, and a very famous yacht club called the Larchmont Yacht Club, but I was on the swimming team and I played hockey in the winter and really didn't have much of an interest in sailing. Flash forward to my college years. I went to 6 different colleges over the course of probably 6 or 7 years with not much success, kind of lost in space, and had that visit in the hospital with my father's partner, who asked me to come spend a summer helping him out in 1993. And I never went back to college. And I turns out I was naturally, I fit right in.
Just a good salesman.
I don't know what it was, but I turned out to be quite good at it.
It is an art, like you said.
Yeah. And I had 2 great teachers. My father was extremely serious and businesslike, and he was the head of the Yacht Architects and Brokers Association Ethics Committee for like 30 years in a row. He was involved in writing the American AYCA, American Yacht Charter Brokers Association, the charter contract that became legal in the United States. I can remember him going down to Washington, D.C., talking to Congress, to change the Jones Act laws or adjust somehow to get this contract to be legal. Whereas his partner, Joe Bartram, was a salesman. So the two of them were a really fit like a hand in a glove. So I had terrific training, two great mentors, and really revered in the business. And I have a great last name. So I was very lucky to have the name that I have.
So that was a genuine kind of leg up.
I think so.
Yeah. But you know, it's not everything. You've got to be able to
sell. I guess not. And I'm lucky. I'm very fortunate. Did okay.
You've done very well. And then, you know, there were some wild years in there too.
The wild years were in there all through the 80s. And then I was a disaster, and I'm a recovering alcoholic since 1991. I'm sober and happy and successful.
And it seems to me that Edmiston of, you know, lots of brokerage companies have had lots of success over the last few years, but Edmiston particularly seems to be flying.
I'm not sure I would call it flying. They're just cruising along. They're really good. It's a machine that Jamie and Nick probably Nick created it. Jamie and Nick together equipped it, and Jamie drives this machine that allows the yacht brokers access to every tool they could ever need, including the camaraderie that the team has with each other and the sharing of the information and the working together. At least from what I see, there's very little stepping on toes. And you've got so many resources at your hands to help keep the success going. There's a lot of quiet success that we don't hear about.
Mm.
But yeah, to answer your question, yes, it's a good operation.
Yeah. So you had a particularly good year last year. Is that fair to say?
Me or the team?
You.
Can't remember.
Yeah.
I think so, yes. If I think back.
Well, I remember seeing there was a flurry of announcements of Sailing Yacht Sold, and your name was attached to a lot of those deals.
I've had some three good years in a row. And coincidentally, when I came to Edmiston, I came 4 years ago. So let's see how this year goes.
Yeah. I mean, the brokerage market is interesting looking ahead. I mean, Trump's election obviously gave it a boost. So we track the numbers really closely, and November and December and January were very good, but there seems to be a lot of uncertainty in the market now. So everyone's looking a bit cautiously at the year ahead. Kind of how do you see it from where you're sitting?
Where I'm sitting, I wouldn't say they're looking cautiously. I think everybody doesn't know what's going on. So it would seem to me that they would be stopped until they can get a sense of what's happening and why it's happening and why he's doing what he's doing. I've been down here for a week, and there's been a lot going on back home. The market seems to be kind of really adjusting. So it doesn't seem to have impacted anyone I've spoken to while I'm here. But when I get home, you know, we'll go to Palm Beach. That'll be an interesting. The tone there will be very curious.
You're absolutely right. It'll be really interesting testing the waters in Palm Beach. And, you know, there's nothing the super market kind of like most markets, really. It hates uncertainty. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot for an owner to put
the brakes,
a buying decision. They like consistency and positivity and all this turbulence.
I remember in 2008, or was it 2008 with the crisis?
Yeah.
2009, the Perini was our best year ever. In hindsight, you look back, it all happened once everybody knew what had happened and they understood, oh, this is the reason. It was that derivative stuff, I think. It seemed to be that was, all right, we now understand what happened. We now can see. And all right, we can protect ourselves from that happening again, myself. And so I'm going to go. And we had terrific year in 2009 and 10. Same thing after 9/11. The 2002-03 was very, very productive for us. Mm. Lucrative, maybe is a better word.
Yeah. What are some of the boats from your Perini years that you're kind of most proud of?
Legacy was the first one. That was pretty interesting, and it was sad what happened to it with the hurricane. But I had great experiences with the family that did Perseus, who then did P2 later. I had a great run with Tom Perkins on Andromeda and Maltese Falcon. And then,
yeah, what was it like building Maltese Falcon?
I didn't build it, but I was right in the middle of the whole thing. Look, we're passing Punta Lassa. But I got to be his broker, and I represented the boat for charters and buckets and boat shows, and it was awesome. I had an amazing time with the Liberty family on the second Liberty. Of course, Joey and Rose Hardy. Andromeda, that was a great one. I sold it from Tom to the Bradfields, from the Bradfields to Fred, from Fred to Buddy, and from Buddy to Joey.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of good experiences on a lot of the boats with a lot of families. It was mostly the families and where we went and the experiences we had.
Yeah. And the Preeny Cup.
The Parsifal family was great too.
They
are great. They were a lot of fun. They had a second Parsifal for a while, and we sold that. So a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. And the I did a few Preeny Cups, and they were always a blast.
The best one was 20. Oh, no, they were all good. They were all just the first one. I remember we were very nervous to see if we could pull it off. It was at Puerto Rotundo. And the second one was there, too. And once we moved over to Yacht Club Costa Smeralda, it seemed that they grew. And I mean, one year we had 18 Perinis. Have you ever seen that photograph? I'll send you the picture.
There's a great photo, actually, of Rose Harty heeled over so far.
With the propeller out. Look, zoom in on that. I'm on the top rail in the back with three other Perini owners who were guests who didn't have their boats.
Yeah, that's a wild photo.
I'm in that.
So, yes, like you said, turbulence is not helpful. Hopefully things will settle down soon. Palm Beach is going to be fascinating. But, you know, it's looking at the numbers, and you look kind of 40 years ago, sailing yachts made up a third of the total super yacht fleet, and now they are...
When did sailing yachts make a third?
It's true. 40 years ago, 1985, of all super yachts on the water, sailing yachts were a third.
But define a super yacht. Back then, 100 feet was a super yacht.
Anything, that's a great photo, yeah. That is a great photo. I was there that year, 2018, yeah. Fantastic. And now they're 14%.
I'm surprised they're 14%. Are you counting 80-footers? 90-footers?
Over 24 meters, yeah.
What's that?
It's about 80 feet.
I don't know the answer. I believe value is important for the people who are not, either you're a sailor or you're not. Either you are connected to that feeling of sailing or the thought that you get thinking about sailing, or you're not.
But the point about value is really, really, really powerful one, because, you know, sailing boats price per gross ton is incredibly high compared to,
But the guy who looks at it that way wasn't going to buy a sailboat even if it was even.
Yeah. Yeah.
In my experience, the fellow who buys a sailboat buys it for emotional and for emotional reasons. They may buy a particular sailboat for value versus another one, but I don't think the equation ever enters it. And if it did, they'd stuff it and wouldn't think about it because they're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
They're either hooked or they're not.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
And do you think it's kind of too simplistic to say it's the guys who kind of, the owners who grew up sailing end up in sailing boats? I mean, if you have no native association with sailing and then you make a load of money and you think, oh, I'm going to go buy a boat. I mean, you obviously, you would 99% of the time that it would end up being a motorboat.
Maybe not 99%, because I know recently I've heard of a couple of young fellows who are Silicon Valley, or maybe not Silicon Valley, internet, very wealthy and very young in their 30s, that have bought, you know, 30 meter small super yachts as their first foray into owning a boat, because they're sporting, they're competitive, and there was an emotional switch that was put off or clicked when they saw a big, beautiful sailboat on a video or something. And I know there's two of them very recently.
Well, I suppose actually extending that, look at Bezos. His first boat was big sailing boat.
Yep.
It's interesting. I mean, everyone seems to say that owners as a whole, as a community, are getting younger. I mean, people are finding this industry at a younger age and more willing to pony up.
And they have more money.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a huge amount of wealth transfer down the generation. And also, obviously the tech money tends to be younger money. Mm-hmm. And they are finding this industry in greater numbers, which is very positive for the CPO business generally.
My guess is that one of those two guys you just told you about will be here next winter for the bucket.
Okay.
As those other fellows that I don't think we were on, but what I mentioned when you asked about how do you grow the bucket, how do you get more boats, I know three or four that would have been here this year, except for circumstances. Somebody is in the South Pacific. Somebody is getting their 10-year refit in Italy. Someone just got delivery of a new boat, didn't quite make it in time to get across. So I can think of four or five boats that aren't here this year that will be here next year.
Yeah.
And one is one of those owners who just jumped into boating.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
And it's important just to emphasize this. How do you define success? Success, 30 boats? My opinion, it is. It's pretty good. Even this one, 25 is a good. And we got the 5 social entries. So there's 30 owners. And I know there are 5 owners that aren't even here with their boats. They came for bucket week.
Yeah. They just wanted the boat in it.
They just want, people that came even without their boat.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They just wanted to be here.
Oh, of course.
They have their friends here, or they're sailing. One family has a boat in Fiji, and they're sailing on a boat here. And actually, we looked at another boat this morning to replace the boat in Fiji.
Okay. So, Bruce, how old are you now?
65.
You don't seem to be remotely slowing down. You're only getting faster. I mean, you are so associated with the sailing yacht market. Do you see a day when you think, you know what, I'm going to pull it back into third gear?
Sometimes, some days I do, and then most days I don't. I'm very lucky that I do what I like to do, and I do what I'm pretty good at. But I do love my wife. I do love my house, and there's a lot of traveling involved in what we do. So I can see someday, but I can't afford to retire and live the way I'd like to live now. So I'm going to continue. And I can't afford to retire because I don't think I'm mentally or emotionally ready to not be part of this very exciting, rewarding, interesting, intriguing world that we're lucky enough to be in.
Yeah, it is a privileged world.
It's a great word. Privileged. We are very privileged. We're really lucky. And yes, we're both good at what we do, but we're also fortunate to be doing what we're good at.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, thanks for letting me tear you away from your duties on board Rose Hearts.
It's my pleasure, Stuart. You know, I love hanging out with you, and thanks for asking good questions.
Absolute pleasure. It always is, Bruce.
Hey, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, bud.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Bruce, a bucket legend. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.